It's the Truepenny Show with your host, James Truepenny.
Hello, welcome to the Truepenny Show. My name's James Truepenny, and this is my show. I would like to welcome back Mr. Simon Heath. How are you, sir?
I'm very, very well. I didn't know whether that was the actual intro for a minute then, because you were doing your jazz club voice. And I thought, is he just testing levels?
No,
or are we actually
no,
doing jazz club?
I was going for the jazz club voice today.
Awesome.
I've had a long day of Father Day'sness with my dad in
Blyton. Oh, of course, yes.
And we went to Curtin Garden Centre.
Oh, lovely.
It was very nice. I had the sweet and sour chicken with chips.
Oh.
I went a little bit way.
Yeah.
But it was good.
That's quite adventurous for you.
It was good. It was, yeah. But Sophie and I went with beef, if you're wondering.
All right.
Yeah, anyway.
I hope you're all taking notes there at home in Radioland.
As you probably guessed, when me and Si do a podcast together, things tend to go a bit wayward, so I'm starting early. tell me what you said before we start recording this.
Well, it's been a while since I've been on this show, and now I'm kicking the kickstand as well. And it's also been a while since I've watched any wrestling, to be honest with you. I've taken a year off from basically existing. And just starting to get back into it. So I just came in and said, look, I've got no opinions and nothing to say about the matches themselves for this show. But I do have a lot of tangents to go on to. So, you know, this podcast might be a long one.
That's fine.
Depending on how many counter opinions you have to my ramblings.
Last week, I forgot to mention that Dookie was replacing Desperado, and Chrissy didn't like that. So, hey, Chrissy. Yeah, so we're just like, I'll correct that now before we go any further. It was Dookie replaces Desperado. I got told off, and quite rightly too, in the Best of Super Juniors. So that's where I'm at the moment.
Well, always start out with the errata, like good editor, you know.
Indeed. And I edit now a couple of websites, apparently. So, Indie Empire Magazine coming up soon. Our friend Ashley, a new publication. We hope you enjoy that. We'll not be looking at WWE in any way, shape, or form. Just indie stuff, North American stuff, British stuff, Progress, stuff like that, and Japanese stuff. And so it should be kind of, if you're a Truepenny Show listener,
stuff
up your alley.
Like.
The stuff that we like. About. There was... Kiara, who writes for many women's wrestling sites, wanted me and her to do columns for Kirsten, who used to write for DDT and used to write for Fightful. She was starting a new website, and me and her were trying to persuade us to write columns. Kiara's would be entitled, "That's That Shit I Don't Like," and mine would be titled, "Another Fucking Thing." she's on the border. We're trying to persuade her.
Yeah.
It'll come in time. Anyway. By the way, we're looking at New Japan Dominion.
Oh,
you know,
shit.
one of the biggest shows of the year. We probably should talk about that because we've been rambling on for 3 minutes now.
Oh, you just wait.
So, Dominion 6.9 from Osaka Joe Hall. One of the best names. Now, let's face it, the best name.
Who is
Hall.
Osaka Joe?
Osaka
that,
Joe.
Who is?
He's related to Tokyo Joe.
Right, of course. What, the guy who used to own the nightclub in Preston?
Well, you see... For those of you who don't know, Tokyo Joe was actually the name of a body man for Giant Baba, I think it was in the 80s, called Tokyo Joe, who dealt with Tokyo Joe Higuchi, who dealt with all the like stuff with Texas and all the stuff with the Bulldogs and things like that, kind of legendary one-legged handler for Giant Baba, who Dynamite once threatened to take his wooden leg and burn it if he ever did him over again. Because Dynamite was like that. He was a nice bloke.
But it was also the name of a terrible nightclub in Preston.
It was.
Tokyo Joe's.
So yeah. And
whether he was involved, we don't know.
Funnily enough, also, Honda had a fixer as well, the motorcycle racing company. And there was a famous classical racing engineer who does a lot of really classic bike rebuilds. Hmm. And he'd was sent in the post anonymously... the plans for the 1968 Honda 6, regarded as the greatest motorcycle ever built. No one had ever seen these plans before, and they were suddenly delivered to him in a brown envelope.
Oh dear.
And was suggested that he might want to have a go at building one. And then a couple of weeks later, a Japanese gentleman called Joseph turns up with a wad of cash.
Yes.
With a bag with HRC Honda Racing Corporation. It's like, we don't want to build one. But you might. and his name was Joe, and he was from Tokyo. So
we're not saying that nightclubs in Preston are in any way run by any Yakuza. Crime syndicate or otherwise. I know things have been said about
PCW.
The Stephen Flood's VIP area and various councillors who shall remain nameless, but. We're not talking about that.
We're talking about Dominion. Let's get to Dominion. Now, Dominion was a fine wrestling show overall, I thought. What did you think going into it, Simon?
Yeah, absolutely loved it. Strong opening, I thought. Really, really good middle. And I'll talk about the end later on.
The issues with Canadians.
I have a lot of issues.
With Canadians?
Just with...
Different issues than Ashley had with Canadians last week.
Yes.
Definitely. Anyway, let's start with this opener. John Moxley makes his Dominion debut, defeating Shota Umino in 3 minutes and 52 seconds. I'm sorry, four and a quarter stars. Oh, no, that's the next one. Thank Christ for that. All right, yeah. No, Mox in a jobber opener. It was all right. I must admit, me and Ashley were like, this is good, but it wasn't that, like, you know, impressive, his win over Juice Robinson. It was good. In the Best of Super Juniors kind of thing, because they didn't want a big main event because the Best of Super Juniors match was going to be better anyway.
Kind of a weird place to start him out, I thought.
Yeah, it was a bit... I can understand why they don't want to run him at Okada straight away. That's something you want to say. That makes sense. And then it was just kind of like, this match was perfectly passable, but he still doesn't seem to have the bag to be a New Japan heavyweight at the moment.
I don't know. I'm of two minds.
Okay.
Because for me... I'm still thinking, what if they'd given him Jay White's spot?
Yes.
Which, to be fair, I thought the exact thing when Pac left WWE as well. I was like, oh, wouldn't he be better at what Jay White's doing? And basically, whenever anybody who has a sniff of Japan comes along, I think, oh, wouldn't they be better at what Jay White's doing?
Is this going to continue until Jay White's good enough in your eyes?
Yes. And I'm not saying he's bad.
No.
I'm just saying that push was way too much, way too soon.
I would agree with you. Having said that, I'd rather watch Jay White than John Moxley.
At the moment. Yes. But I tend to feel if they had given him that similar push, although again, probably too quick. I don't know. Full disclosure, John Moxley, Dean Ambrose, whatever he's called, from CZW to FCW... he wasn't really in NXT, was he? So straight on to WWE. He's never really interested me that much.
No, I think there are people who work on this podcast who do enjoy his work very, very much.
And I can see
why they do.
Yes,
he
absolutely.
Does look like a star.
Yes.
And I appreciated things like the stuff he's wearing in AEW is very much North American style wrestler, and changing into short shorts and shoot shoes makes him look much more like a New Japan wrestler. So yes. I appreciate him making the effort, but it's still not there yet.
It's just, to me, it's, does he want to be Brian Pillman or does he want to be Arn Anderson? Because
yes.
I feel like he's trying to do both at the same time, and I don't think you can.
No, and that would also kind of like lend towards neither of them were World Heavyweight Champion.
Oh, no.
So, you know, no. I'm not suggesting, and there's nothing wrong with being a strong mid-carder, as both of them were. The strongest of all the mid-carders, if you will.
Yes.
However, it doesn't scream heavyweight championship material to me.
What I feel like he should be going for, and I mean, clearly he's not the same size, but then who is these days? I think he should be aiming for Stan Hansen.
Yeah.
And just go all out, full brawler, just...
The Bruiser Brody kind of...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And just do that and be that kind of gaijin.
Yeah.
Just, he comes in, just steamrolls, he's throwing lariats and forearms and haymakers all over the place. And he's starting to do it. And I mean, he's only his second match in.
I would actually, out of the matches that intrigue me the most, Suzuki versus Moxley would make the most sense to me.
Oh, yeah.
That would be cool. I'd like seeing that. But. Yeah. I just can't see Moxley versus anyone else really clicking the numbers for me. That's not to say he's bad. It's just a disconnect I've got.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think I'm with you. I don't see him as that top star, which I think is how he would like to think of himself.
Yeah, which is fair enough.
Absolutely. You know, you need that. But he's just not there for me. Having said that, I thought this match was exactly what it needed to be.
Yes.
And I really liked the bit at the end where he kind of dragged the...
So I'm wondering if he took him home. Like, yeah. Here, Renee, yeah. I brought you a present.
I like. I really love Shota, and I think Shota's he's awesome. Going to be really good. And I like the fact that he's sort of ascended to that like young boy plus level, where he's not got his own music yet. He's still got, you know, comes out to the young boy.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the Japanese equivalent of a Titantron? I don't know, Godzillatron.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Kaijutron.
There you go.
But you know, he's got knee pads. Yes. Which is obviously that's second level. Yeah. You have knee pads, you know,
and
your second
a finisher.
Level. And he's got a finisher.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's got about like six moves as well, which is a couple more than you really allowed as a young boy. So yeah. He's obviously they've tapped him.
Yes.
He's
been given some stuff.
Yeah. He'll be in Mexico a couple of months' time.
losing his air in a match.
New Japan, send some more people on excursion to Britain, please.
Well, you got the great Khan.
Yeah, other people. Preferably.
He's undefeated. Oh, he was undefeated for a long time. I haven't watched Rev Pro for too long. I should ask Ashley, who's watching lots of Rev Pro for obvious reasons. There you go. Right, the next match up was Shingo Takagi. He defeats Satoshi Kojima in 11 minutes and 14 seconds in what must be said was a bit of a corker for these two old bastards.
Yeah, loved it. Loved it. Uncle fight? Not really a full-blown dad
no,
fight.
No. I mean, Satoshi is a dad.
Oh, yeah. Kojima.
This is more of
dad.
A family feud.
But... Yeah, I don't think Takagi is as quite... I don't like to use the word ascended because he's great. But he's not at dad level yet. He's filthy uncle, isn't he?
He's a drunk uncle at a wedding. That's what he is.
He absolutely is, yeah. which you need on the card.
Even more than Kanemura.
Yeah.
Yeah, him and Kanemura, this going away.
Kanemura's the embarrassing uncle. The like the one who does karaoke but can't sing.
Yeah.
That's Tai Chi.
That's Tai Chi. Anyway.
Sorry.
Yeah.
No, I love this match. Again, you know, it was really just a setup for Takagi to throw his G1 chips at the table, which we didn't
mention. Yes, John Moxley and Shingo Takagi both claimed their places in the G1 for this summer.
They asked nicely. Yeah, I mean, how does the protocol work there?
I think Takagi's probably going to get there, and I think Moxley will probably. Moxley have hired him for that, clearly.
Yeah.
It's like you're not doing anything in July, are you?
Kayfabe, I understand that non-kayfabe, if you go out there and you say, I want to be in the G1, you're in the G1. Otherwise, they wouldn't let you go out there and say it. But. Yeah. I'm not sure what the protocol is, you know, officially.
Officially, like the official running order, they will look at the top contenders for the 20 places they have.
Right.
Or this year it might be 40, considering the New Japan Cup was twice as big, and they're going like,
and
right then.
And they're letting half the juniors in, apparently.
Yeah,
what
are we going to do with Chase Owens? It could be the G1.
Yeah, stick him in the G1.
Yoshihashi looked a bit iffy last year. Let's make it 18 in each group. We'll do the G1 for 3 months. We'll still be cracking on in October.
Sorry, Farley, not this year.
Not after last year. You need a rest, son. Right, yeah. So we'll see what happens there. I can actually imagine them jumping it to like 12 or 14 in a group just for a one-off.
Yeah.
It's not a special anniversary or anything like that, but it is just like... Not for New Japan, but they've got those Dallas shows as well. They've got to fill some stuff out. So I think maybe they could stick another two in. That would get them an extra two nights on the road. Without it being too much of a stretch, because in reality, it's bloody hard work doing these shows. So, you know, they can only do it for a certain amount of the year. They can't go like forever with it. So there is a limited amount of time you can put wrestlers through that kind of.
And I mean, you've got the UK, I say tour, it's one show, but I mean, that's like only a month after the end of the G1, isn't it?
So, yeah,
I mean,
so yeah, it's going to be interesting anyway. But yeah, actually, Shota and Shingo. One to watch because it was actually a really well-built wrestling match between two veterans who know what they're doing, didn't take any silly risks, didn't do anything particularly stupid, and got somebody over, which is what Satoshi's supposed to do these days.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, one of the best things about New Japan is when they bring a guy in who has the sort of credibility of a Takagi and they need to put him over, they've always got those guys who they can send out there and have 4+ star matches with them and make them look great and not lose anything in the process.
Yeah, exactly. Because Kojima's not... Probably won't be in the G1 this year anyway because he's not fit enough anyway. So he allowed himself to be sacrificed for the greater good.
Yeah, and even if he is in the G1, he's going to be playing that role.
Yeah,
for everyone else. So
now then, speaking of the British tour, Jushin Thunder Liger and Yoshihashi let me read this straight, defeated Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. when Yoshihashi pinned Zack Sabre Jr. to guarantee his title shot. My friend across the way is looking both angry and disgusted.
You have actually read my face wrong this time, James. I have a few thoughts about this. One, if you're going to make me give a crap about Yoshihashi, the way to do it is to put him in a match where I get to hear Suzuki's theme tune for a start.
I was going to say, where I get to hear bones crack.
Well, yeah. No, that as well. But also, if you absolutely have to, and we can argue the toss as to whether this is a good idea or not. Spoilers, it's not. If you really have to have Yoshihashi wrestle Zack Sabre Jr. for the British title, I mean, is this going to be a Royal Quest?
It's the main event of Royal Quest.
It's the main event.
Yes. Right. All right. I don't think it's the main event. It's one of the main matches.
Right, okay. Well, yeah. Just for the listeners there, that was my disgusted face that I just made there. But if you absolutely have to have him pin Zack Sabre Jr., in order to push this feud, have him do it with a Le Magistral, and then I will be happy. Because
which they did.
Because I love that roll-up, and you never see it. And it was honestly, and this goes back to the days of SmackDown 2 on the PlayStation 2. That was always my roll-up. That was the finishing move. Every character I ever created, that was what I wanted to win a match for. I absolutely love that move. So if you're going to make me give a damn about Yoshihashi, that is how you do it.
The first person I saw do a Mahistra Cadle would have been Jerry Estrada in 93. He was caught at a cork in Mahistra Cradle to Jerry Estrada.
Do you know who the first person I saw do it was? S.A. Rios.
Ah, yeah. There you go. Cool.
Probably on an episode of Heat, because let's face it, that's the only place he ever wrestled.
Also in this match, the continuing story of Minoru Suzuki trying to make Jushin Thunder Liger's life a misery for as long as he's still around. They're building slowly. I'm cracking on for next Wrestle Kingdom. They're going to have the big showdown.
Yeah. It's kind of like, it's like Highlander, isn't it? You've got these two fellas who are basically immortal and they've been around forever.
And indestructible.
Yeah, and there can be only one.
Indeed. Yeah, and I think that's probably going to be Wrestle Kingdom next year is going to be Liger versus Suzuki. At this rate, they're slow burning it. I don't think they can make it last another 6 months, but we can try. We'll see.
I mean, we could have been sat here 2 or 3 years ago saying the exact same thing. Yeah, here we are. I would, personally speaking, though, I would like to see more of this tag team. I'd like to see more of Suzuki and Zack Sabre.
I think so as well.
I would like there to be a bit of a run, because the tag team division in New Japan at the minute is a little bit dull, isn't
it? I think it's just thin is the issue. I think as well, like, the trouble is when one faction has the tag team titles, like Yujiro and Chase is a perfectly acceptable tag team, actually really enjoyable to watch, but they can't go for the tag team titles because the Gorillas have it.
Yes.
And it's like, actually, Bushi and Naito make a pretty good tag team as well, but you can't see them against LIJ. So it's like, everything's like a bit stuck because of the way things are, and there's no, I mean, you've got GBH and most violent players with Makabe and Yano, but that's about it, and they can't go at it because they're supposed to be a fun tag team. You can't run them at the titles all the time.
No.
And it don't make things as watchable as it used to be.
It doesn't work in a feud with Gorillas of Destiny either, does it really?
Whereas Suzuki and Zack against Gorillas of Destiny,
yeah,
that I could see being a lot of fun.
And then you put the titles on Suzuki and Zack, and they can absolutely have a feud with Yano and Makabe. I mean, that would be, whereas, I'd watch that all day long.
Yeah, whereas G and D have to keep these straight faces on now, especially as like Tama Tonga had that fun run for a little bit, but he has to be deadly serious now. He's got to be, you know, it was a bit like Carl Anderson and Gallows were at the end of their run, where they would be ha 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 and then turn dead serious because there was business ahead. Gorillas have to do that now because they've got to establish themselves as this great tag team, you know.
They're really pushing it on commentary as well.
Yeah, they have. So. Which, and it's true, they are, you know. But we'll get more into tag teams when we get two tag teams. Hiroshi Tanahashi, Juice Robinson, and Raisuki Taguchi defeat Bullet Club, Chase Owens, Jay White, Taiji Ishimori. 9 minutes and 48 seconds. It was all right. not a lot you can say about this.
Don't care.
No, it was perfectly acceptable. Bunch of guys I really, really like. Having 9 minutes and 48 seconds of a payday, that
it's a New Japan six man.
Yeah,
I mean, what more
fine.
Can be said? It's,
I will watch Chase Owens wrestle a broomstick all night because I know. Yeah. In fact, I'm going to watch any of these guys wrestle a broomstick all night, and it'd be perfectly entertaining.
Except Jay White.
I like Jay White.
No, I'm only kidding. But again, if you want to upset me, I know New Japan aren't listening, but you know, just in case, on the off chance, if you put Taguchi in a match, you better damn well play his theme music. I don't care about Go Ace. I want to hear the trumpets. It's important.
Right then. Okay. It was all right anyway. Next match was for the Never Openweight Championship. Tomohiro Ishii beats some fight out of Tai Chi in 16 minutes and 11 seconds. And I must admit, this is by far my favourite Tai Chi match. I think mainly because he was getting beaten up.
Oh my God, I hate myself for it, but I love this match.
I must admit that Tai Chi has tried really hard since over the last year to actually come across as someone who looks like he knows what he's doing.
Yes.
And he has kind of told this story of people having to beat the fight out of him.
Yeah.
So it didn't look so stupid that he did all that thing, all the heel stuff, and then won anyway.
Yeah.
So it actually looked like he was actually dangerous tea.
And this speaks to New Japan's audience awareness as well.
Yeah.
Which is something we talk about a lot, and it's something that's often missing. Well, I assume it's often missing from WWE. It was 5 years ago when I was watching it. I don't know whether it is now. Probably. From what you hear on Twitter, we assume that it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, they know how people are perceived by the public, and they play off that, and they know what people think of Taichi. And Taichi probably knows as well.
Oh, yeah, he is a master manipulator, which is what wrestlers are supposed to be, and they used to be back in the day.
Yeah, workers.
Yeah, workers. People working you for your enjoyment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, Taichi's like... I still don't particularly like watching him wrestle, but he is a lot better than he used to be, and it's actually a watchable match. There's also the fact he's working against Tomohiro Ishii, who can drag a great match out of a brick. So
how good was he in this match?
Just
the last sort of 7-8 minutes of this match were just absolutely amazing.
Yeah.
And it's a testament to him that you watch it and you're not even sure whether he's carrying Taichi.
No.
You're watching it thinking, is this actually a give and take here?
Yeah.
You can't even tell that it's one guy dragging a match out of another one. That's how good he is at it.
Yeah, and the fans were along for the ride.
Like, yeah, the crowd
they really were
really
into
hot.
It. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and Ishii's now the 5-time openweight champion, greatest openweight champion of all time.
It's the nicest guy in prison, isn't it?
Yeah, he's the guy who's made that title what it is over the last decade. And
what is it though?
Well, I mean, no, but it does get people over. Ospreay would not be in such a big place as he was if he wasn't openweight champion this year. I don't think he would have been. He wouldn't have had that cracker against Ibushi.
Maybe.
So, you know.
We'll discuss that later.
We'll discuss that. Okay. But I do think that championship is worthwhile, more worthwhile when someone like Ishii has it.
You can certainly win me over with the argument that it's more worthwhile than, say, the US title.
Yes, because the US title needs some polish. Moxley's got an uphill task with that, to be honest.
Well, I mean, it was invented essentially for a guy that really isn't there anymore.
Yes, he was also Canadian.
Well, that as well, yeah. But
I know.
Also, Moxley, for some reason, has a Union Jack on his jacket. The only thing I can assume is that other countries, because he's like the new knife pervert, isn't he? Whenever a new gaijin comes in, it's just like, oh, he likes knives. So I'm assuming that somebody in the New Japan office was like, well, I mean, Britain, they've got a lot of knife crime, right?
Oh, don't start with that. You see my Twitter feed today?
I saw the only thing I saw was you put I'm just going to avoid my mentions now. If you need me, send me a DM. And I was just like, I am not even looking. I'm not wading through. I don't want to know. It's fine.
Death by Susie, who's a wonderful Twitter user, posted a picture last night.
Explaining
the amount of deaths per capita in many US cities in comparison to London. Because Donald Trump said that London was a horrible place for the amount of murders going on.
Well, Katie Hopkins said that.
Yeah, Hopkins said that. And that was quote tweeted by Donald Trump. Because, you know, Katie Hopkins, reliable person you need to be quoting.
Because 2019.
Yeah, and I replied to somebody using that graphic rather stupidly. And this morning I woke up and my phone had 3,500 likes on that tweet and 500 retweets. Now it's somewhere up around about 1,000 retweets and 5,000 likes.
Oh, dear.
So my tweet blew up, which was nice.
But that's not a tweet. You'd rather it was one of these, hey, check out the Beginner's Guide to Japan.
Yeah. I did get about 50 followers off of it, something ridiculous like that.
Well, I mean, in true rapper style, you should be plugging your SoundCloud. That's what you use that for. But it's like, no, you're all suitably angry at me. Check out this.
But yeah, so I also had to spend a large part of this morning explaining percentages to Republicans. Because they couldn't understand. It should be in percentages so we can easy to understand. There's a comment from us off. It is. Yes. Per capita means percentage. As someone else who believed Baltimore had more people in it than London. Anyway.
Right.
She did apologise, though, to be fair to her. She was like, oh, I'm sorry, I did not realise that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What did they say, old newspaper adage, never start a fight with somebody who buys ink by the barrel?
Indeed. Indeed. That was an American president who said that. It was Jefferson.
Was it now?
Yes.
And that is basically everybody now, Twitter's a thing. So.
Anyway, but yes, Ishii and Tai Chi was fantastic.
Yep.
Highly recommended.
Go out of your way to watch it.
Indeed,
which
do.
Possibly the only time we've ever said that about a Tai Chi match.
The only time we may ever say that about a Tai Chi match.
Knows, man? Who knows? Maybe this is the renaissance.
Maybe Kawada will now speak to him.
Yes. That'd
yes,
be nice.
That'd be nice. He can go into the ramen restaurant. Kawada might actually serve him now. Give him a slight nod of appreciation that you weren't a complete embarrassment to my career.
Yep.
Yes. And move on.
Yeah.
To serve Raymond somewhere
else.
Get
a better haircut.
It's better than the one he used to have with the rat tail. Anyway, hey, we mentioned hair.
Hair talk!
Hey! 26 minutes in, we start talking about hair. Right,
I feel
then.
Like we should have a bell.
The IWGP Tag Team titles were on the line. The current Ring of Honor and IWGP Tag Team Champions, the Gorillas of Destiny. I say Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions. They tend to treat those belts with about as much respect as most people treat
Ring of Honor.
Ring of Honor, yes. As they're not that keen on Ring of Honor. They're not exactly proud to be Ring of Honor Tag Team Champions at the minute. It's more like, well, we've got to carry these through airports. So, yes, that they did defeat Evil and Sonata in a bit of a corker, it had to be said. It was really good. Not rated by... Oh, it was rated.
No, that can't be for that.
That
match.
Can't
it's
be
It's not that match. No,
that must be the other way around.
It must be the next match. Yeah. It doesn't have a rating.
This doesn't have a rating. I'm kind of like... disappointed because I actually really enjoyed this one.
I didn't.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, not bothered at all. I remember, I was going to say we were sat here 2 years ago, but we weren't. It was in a club in Manchester, but we were sat on this podcast, in the ethereal space that is the True Penny Show, 2 years ago, and we just finished watching the G1. We were having a good old discussion about Sonata, and we were saying this is his time, and he's had a great G1. And he's going to the moon. Maybe he'll do a bit of a stint in America. Maybe maybe they'll give him a Ring of Honor title, and he'll do a bit there. But yeah, he's going to be the next big thing. He's going to be the next sort of Naito to move up to that level. Don't know what happened to that.
Yeah, true.
I mean,
I think it is a case of too many toys to play with.
Oh, which we said 2 years ago. Didn't we? It was like, there's
so long as they don't get distracted.
There's not enough room. Like, there's so many people who came out of that G1 a couple of years ago. Who we thought, they could push them to the moon if they wanted to out of this G1.
Yeah,
like you can't do.
And we have somebody else to talk about after this match as well.
Yeah, but I don't know. You know how much I love LRJ.
Yeah,
but Evil and Sonata just haven't done much for me as a tag team in a long while.
I think that's the trouble, is they've just had the same people to go against.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's like you still got Killer Elite Squad under contract. Bring them back.
Yeah.
Let them have a go at Gorillas of Destiny for a while, because it would actually be quite good matches.
Yeah.
You can pick up a tag team from... Get the Briscoes back for a run.
Yeah.
Maybe not, but if you're desperate,
there'll be good matches again.
LIJ versus the Briscoes is actually something I'd watch.
Yeah.
It'd be a good match. We're not big fans of Jay and Mark here because of their political attitudes, but there's no denying they're one of the best tag teams that ever lived.
Yeah, and I mean, the promos would be great.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So,
I think it works, but equally, I do think you're right. I think we've seen GOD versus this particular group of LIJ far too many times in the last 12 months to make it hit anymore. I'm kind of thinking that did seem like the final chapter.
Yeah.
And they'll move on, because both teams need a break from each other, to be honest.
They do. This is the thing. I mean, I think this is the one place that New Japan does sometimes fall down, is they bring in singles competitors quite a lot from other places. Mm. They'll pick a few up from the UK and take some from Mexico and bring her in. But you rarely see them pick an established tag team up from somewhere else and just go, oh, come and have a stint in.
Yeah. I mean, they do it occasionally. Briscoes did it a couple of years ago.
Yeah, but that's Ring of Honor. You've already got that link. I'm thinking more, like, from your AAA or...
CMLL.
And maybe from the indie scenes.
Like Dragon Lee's just done in...
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, like, you could get Aussie Open easily enough.
Yeah.
But I think the one thing that would hold them back is you've got a junior and a heavyweight in the same team.
I mean, you say that.
I know you and me would say that, but...
Well, no, I'm just thinking, I mean, Carl Fletcher, he's not the lanky lad that he used to be. He's put on a fair bit of size just recently, and they like him.
Yeah, yeah.
Like he did some work with... he did some work on the... Ring of Honor show, didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
That they had on... I can't remember who they wrestled. I think it was LIJ, wasn't it?
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah. So they've worked them out. Mm. Mark Davis in New Japan, it's, to me, that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's perfect.
Yeah.
Talk about your man who could be a Stan Hansen.
Yeah. And I kind of like thinking as well, like... CCK, Brooks and Gresham.
Yeah,
would work.
I mean, Brooks is over at the minute in
but
DDT.
He's working for DDT,
isn't he?
Yeah, because of his Fight Club Pro connections, I'd guess. So, but
and
he's
Drew
a free
Park
agent.
Is over there at the minute as well.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, it depends on how badly they wanted a tag team, but that would work as a short-term deal.
The Gresham version, or
yeah, it would have to be the Gresham
version.
Well,
I know Lycos is, yeah, but I mean, there's 400 versions of CCK.
The original CCK.
Yes. Yeah.
Actually,
I guess.
The advertised original version of CCK.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Well, there's nothing stopping you having a wolf at ringside, is there? He needs a job.
No, absolutely
not. That
would
be perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could bother Chris Charlton. I'd love that.
Right.
But yeah, we need some new blood in the New Japan.
Yes.
Obviously,
tag
you're listening.
Teams.
I've already pointed this out. Clearly,
tag
New Japan
teams.
Are listening. Somebody.
It is literally the hottest time for tag teams in the world.
Really is.
For the last 20 years. The most watched match of this year is the Young Bucks versus the Lucha Brothers, which, Jim, we know you can't do.
Yeah.
But you can do something similar.
There's plenty out there.
And when are LAX's contracts up?
Oh.
Get them.
Yes. Please.
Lots.
Yes.
They don't need to be there anymore. They've done all they can do. They'll be fine.
Yeah.
And Impact might be better without them, to be honest. Right.
And who cares if it's not?
Actually, we could do that. If you could just, like, get all of the good tag teams out of Impact and all the good wrestlers out of Impact and put them anywhere else.
Yeah.
And so that all the bad wrestlers were in one place.
Yeah, and also Ring of Honor do that with them as well, so.
Well, you yeah. But it should be handier if it was just Ring of Honor. Then we have to watch Ring of Honor at all.
Yeah.
Actually, Steel Chair the other day. I read a support in the Steel Chair. Does anyone watch Ring of Honor anymore? And the responses were like, they're a horrible company. No. Forgot they were existing. One of somebody said, forgot they were they actually happened.
Well, I mean, they WrestleMania weekend, they pretty much blew it forever, didn't they?
Yeah.
So...
It is amazing that there was a shared show where one company was ultimately praised for everything they did and the other company on the same show were shit-canned for everything, the stupid maneuver they pulled off.
Yeah, you can just see it down the line. It's like the terrible Superman mustache face in Justice League. Like, you can spot it. It's like, oh, that's the New Japan bit.
Yeah. Right then, we should move on to... it was a good match. You should watch it. You're not so keen, but it was a good match. Okay.
I wasn't offended by it.
You wasn't offended. Oh, there's plenty of matches I've been offended by this year. Right.
Yep.
Let us move on to another person who claimed a place in the G1 Climax tournament. The music, the crowd, the crowd died down. It was very, very quiet. Then the opening chords of Katsuya Shibata's theme hit, which always gives me goosebumps because that theme is awesome.
Yes, it is.
And when he came out and he pointed down the aisle for an extraordinary long period of time, it's like, Kishiori, you've not done this in a long while, have you, mate?
I have a theory about this.
Yeah.
I think that he thought that there was going to be a theme music change.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then maybe they didn't even have one yet.
Yeah.
Maybe the guy in the back couldn't find it. He didn't know what he was supposed to press, so he just kept going with it. And the gentleman who I'm sure you will talk about shortly, just wandered out after about, well, it felt like 5 minutes. I don't know how long it was, but he was stood
there. It was an inordinately long period of time. Yeah. Well, they call in Australia a considerable period of time.
Yes.
Yes.
And for a man who's had head injuries, I was a little bit worried. It's like, is he meant to be out here?
Yeah, yeah.
Has he forgotten why he came out?
We shouldn't laugh. But I do get this feeling like they've got the full raft of like theme music. So when he wrestler just wanders out, they just press... Or maybe they have them chipped at the dojo. So when you walk past, it just goes on.
Because you can buy those toy wrestling rings, can't
you? Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Where all the figures have got little chips in them.
Yeah.
And when you push them past the entrance gate, it plays their theme music.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm assuming they do that in real life now.
Because
that'd
save
so much time, wouldn't it? And it explains when somebody does a run-in who's not supposed to be in a match, the music gets played.
Yeah,
because
perfect.
I mean, otherwise the sound guy's in on it. Like, if it's a heel running in, what's he doing?
Yeah.
The only way it makes sense is if all wrestlers have an RFID chip like cats do.
Yes, which is replaceable for when you change to different companies.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. You do a flash upgrade, don't you?
It's like mapping for your car.
Yeah, it is, yeah. Yeah.
Can we retune Randy Orton? I'd like him to be less... Can you pick up some revs in the opening 10 minutes?
You leave Randy Orton alone. He's good value on Twitter these days because he doesn't give a shit anymore.
I made my money.
He's a lot like Matt Riddle in that respect. But, you know, he's already had his career, whereas Matt Riddle just doesn't care, seemingly.
Anyway, Katsuyori Shibata comes out and he introduces the returning to Japan, but not to New Japan, because it's a long while since Kenta's been in a New Japan ring. Mm. But he did bring down Kenta, who also claimed a place in the G1.
He certainly did.
He did.
While Shibata tried to sort of squish his head using the power of his mind.
But there was a reason why they got Katsuyori Shibata to do it. They were old running buddies in the Noah days, and Shibata was his corner man when Kenta won the GHC Heavyweight Championship back in the mid-2000s. Interview with Chris Charlton on the New Japan Lions podcast afterwards, he said, "I'm here to win things because I'm no longer that stupid Hideo Itami."
can we first tangent?
Yes.
It's probably not the first tangent, but first
first
one
official
I've,
tangent.
First one I've realised that I'm doing. Can we talk a little bit about how you feel about him coming to New Japan rather than Noah in the wake of the 10-year anniversary? Because I know a lot of people seem to get upset about it. And I was just wondering.
I would think...
I suppose I should explain a little bit more for people who
we
don't
should,
know.
Yeah. Okay, so it's Misawa's 10th anniversary of his passing. Kenta was one of his great rivals as well as a great student of his. Mm-hmm. There is a feeling that perhaps he should have dropped off for a cup of coffee at least in Noah before he went anywhere else, because that is the company that gave him his future, which is perfectly reasonable, I think.
Yep,
having said that, the marquee says professional wrestling and you have to make the best deal for your future, and Misawa would understand that.
Yes.
Because he did it. Misawa was one of the first guys to ever do that and took an entire company with him.
Exactly. I mean, I'm glad we're in lockstep on this one, because I think it's ridiculous to hold Kenta to this nonsensical standard. I mean, we're talking about Misawa, who, as you say, literally he took half a company away from All Japan at the time and just started a new one. And I mean, the Noah that exists now is not the Noah that Kenta left. I mean, yes, it's the 10th anniversary. Should he have gone for a cup of coffee? I don't know. Would that have been... I feel like that would be more disrespectful if he'd just gone for a few matches.
I think if he rolls up on the anniversary show, shakes a few hands and says that's actually more the right way of going about it.
Yeah, maybe so.
You know.
But I sort of go back to, I always think, would we rather be seeing Pac in a New Japan ring rather than him having gone back
to Dragon Gate?
To Dragon Gate, where he sort of came up. And then we get all these ridiculous matches over here where he can't lose because he's got the Dragon Gate title. I mean, I personally would have rather have seen him sack Dragon Gate off completely, go to New Japan, and then we could have, we could have had a proper feud between him and Ospreay instead of the watered down nonsense that we got.
I think as well, we kind of like don't see Dragon Gate in the same breath as New Japan, but they get 5,000 seaters every night as well.
They do, but speaking from the UK,
yeah,
that is not how it's seen over here.
No, I mean, it's not.
Dragon Gate has a very niche audience over here.
Yeah. Well, that's the trouble. I think there's a lot of perceptions of, like, you know, Noah and All Japan are not anywhere near where they used to be.
No.
Dragon Gate is the second biggest company in Japan. it has a niche audience, but equally, it's for a guy like Pac, that's bread and butter money, and if he's the champion, it's going to be a lot more worth his while.
It is, but you've only got a certain period of time when you're coming back onto the quote-unquote indies to make that sort of name for yourself and come out the gate, fly out the gate, out the dragon
gate. You sound like Chris Charlton.
sorry.
Sorry, nothing wrong with Chris Charlton, but it's just the way you said that. I was like, that's a Chris Charlton commentary maneuver if ever. Carry on.
So I just tend to think, I a lot of people I talk to are kind of bored of Pac already.
Mm.
And we were all so excited when he was coming back. And it was just sort of like, oh. But yeah. I'm sure if you're a Dragon Gate fan and you go into those shows regularly, it's just like, this is amazing. Thank God he came back.
Yeah.
Which is fine. And that's what you wanted to do. But yeah,
I can see where you were all right. But equally, this is the kind of thing that didn't happen years and years ago.
Oh,
because,
yeah.
Like, even on, I even go back as far as Pac's first run.
Mm.
Like, no one would have cared if he'd lost a Fight Club Pro match whilst he was Dragon Gate champion seven years ago.
No.
Because,
well, nobody'd have known.
But like, Fight Club do shows in Tokyo now.
Yeah, yeah.
So therefore, like, people care because it's Dragon Gate quite clearly.
And
do
you can
care.
Watch everything.
Yeah, that's like, it.
Which I mean, before you wouldn't.
You wouldn't believe this, but it does affect people's matches. I mean, I was talking with Jazzy Gabbert. She has some matches from very early in her career, back in her Jazzy B days, from promotions in France, which were the drizzling shit, so she puts it quite clearly, and she kind of doesn't want them to be there anymore because it, like, now she's signed with WWE and her job is secure and she's, you know, she's fine. But for a while, when she was on the indies, people looked you up and,
they
don't see you in that barnstormer from Paris with Kaylee Ray in front of 5,000 people. They see you in a tent in front of 30 people battering a no-opa.
I always say this to my nephews. I'm always glad that there is no permanent internet record of how embarrassing I was when I was a teenager. You know, I mean, like, or even younger than that, like making like mock radio shows on a little ghetto blaster or something. Those tapes don't exist anymore. You can't find those. But if you've got a YouTube channel when you're 10 years old, that still exists when you're 35.
Exactly, yes.
And I mean, how glad is Ric Flair now that there's hardly any of those matches when he was huge and fat? You know, you can't get those matches anymore. You cannot watch those matches.
Yeah.
So everybody just thinks of him as the cardio machine and not the big lump that he was when he first started. So.
Oh, dear. But yeah, speaking of cardio machines,
the
IWGP Head Junior Heavyweight Championship match changed hands when Will Ospreay defeated Dragon Lee in 20 minutes and 7 seconds of a match, actually, I was a lot happier with from Mr. Ospreay. It was a lot less, let's see how many ways I can try and break my neck. And it was much more of a story, well-told story, paced, had big maneuvers in the right places. He has put on weight. He has put on bulk. He is doing things in a much more Takagi-ish fashion, if you will.
Mm.
Taking less risks, but putting more story into the match. Because he couldn't wrestle like that forever. He's 26 now. Things start to wake a bit more in the morning. So I am much more pleased. And Dragon Lee's run as IWGP Heavyweight Champion has been a refreshing blast of fresh air. Kind of sad that he didn't get to wrestle Hiromu before he went back to CMLL. But having said that, it's been fun whilst it's lasted.
I mean, this match for me is the second best match I've seen this month, and the first best match was Ospreay Takagi.
Yeah.
I am amazed by Will Ospreay.
Yeah.
At the moment, for me, and this is the major tangent that I really wanted to get into today, that's actually specifically about matches as opposed to just wrestling in general. I wonder, and this is something that's been talked about on other podcasts and a lot of people are discussing it, are we in a position now where we can talk about Ospreay as the best British wrestler who has ever lived?
I think that's a big ask.
Putting aside personal feelings, as we often have to.
With William, me and Will have not had the best of relationships in my head, because every time I see him, I go, please don't say something stupid.
Yes.
And he inevitably disappoints me about once every 2 months.
Yeah, and I am generally known as the world's largest Will Ospreay apologist for most things. But I struggle to think of anybody else who has had, I mean, he's got years to come.
I mean, I think,
so
I think if you look at the greatest British wrestlers of all time.
Yep.
Okay, so we will do a quick list here. The most visible and probably the longest lasting is William Regal.
Yeah, but I... And don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Absolute legend. Love him to bits. But I don't think he's had a run in a spot
like... As high.
Exactly. For that amount of time. And, I mean, you can go back and look at William Regal matches, and there are great matches there.
Yeah.
But can you really find 20, 30
classics.
Matches of... Yeah, pretty much. Right, okay. On big
That's
stages.
That, right, okay. Well, I would go next down the ladder, which may be surprising to some people, but I think is true. The next down the ladder as far as exposure is concerned, because I think that's the big thing first. You've got to say, like, yes, I could talk about Chick Cullen, I could talk about various other people, but to be blunt, they never wrestled outside the UK or never wrestled outside of Europe, which is fine because they made a living and they did a good living whilst they were doing it. If you're going to go down to the next stage, the next two or three people are going to be Davey Boy. That's got to be the obvious one. Dynamite is the next obvious one.
But
the one I think that fills that criteria that you said the most, there's two. Dynamite's one of them. Mark Rocco's the other one.
Yeah.
Who did have... I can point you to 30 classics Rocco had.
I don't doubt it.
And I could point you to 30 classics Dynamite had.
Yes.
At that level. Marty Jones, again, is another one I would say that because he did it in a different way. He was as well known around the world as them, but he didn't do it through TV. He did it through live appearance. Because he was on that old international circuit, which included apartheid South Africa and Australia, which was... to be blunt, a lot grimmer because you weren't guaranteed on your payoffs. You weren't guaranteed you were going to get home. You weren't guaranteed you're going to get your passport back. So there was, and he did spend time in Japan. He did do all of those things, but he isn't as well known because he did it like a lot of British wrestlers, and specifically that coast that went through Wigan their own way because they could.
Yes.
And the one guy, I will come back to that in a second. The other two guys, who also, funnily enough, come from the snake pit, because they're all going to come from the snake pit except for Will, would be Billy Robinson, who was, again, a guy who did it his way or else. And the other one would be Bert Azzarati, who did most of his wrestling in the pre-TV era outside of the UK because he was blackballed by Joint Promotions not long after Joint Promotions first started. I will tell you the Bert Azzarati stories I can give you because Bert is an absolute legend of a human being, and there is at least a couple I can say before the end of this, which I may have said before, but they're well worth going over again. What are your thoughts, though, Mr. Heath?
Well, I mean, obviously you are vastly more steeped in the history of, you know, I've seen a fair few Rocco matches. I've seen a fair few, mainly as Black Tiger, but... I've seen a fair few Dynamite matches, mainly as part of the Bulldogs, though. I haven't really seen like a lot of the Stampede stuff that those two guys did. I don't agree with you with Davey Boy.
Fair enough. No, I think Davey Boy was technically competent and could draw. Wasn't the best promo in the world.
No, and I just, in terms of sheer match quality, I don't. He had good matches. I don't think I've ever seen a Davey Boy match that's made me like get up off my seat.
I think probably the match against Bret at SummerSlam.
Yeah, that would be the one.
That'd be it,
But I mean, the fact that you can only really name one. I don't think he's in the conversation.
But as far as like exposure and draw.
Oh, absolutely. I would say he's, in terms of that, and obviously you've got to look, there's a modern stint to that. You're going to have modern waiting because you can't really talk about drawing. I mean, you know, who was a draw in the World of Sport days? Big Daddy.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. But,
well, Jack Pye was doing, but even then, as we've had big conversations about this, like they were doing Wembley Stadium in the 80s to the tune of 7,000 or 8,000. It's just nobody wrote about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So exactly right. And I Ospreay is really the only one that I've had the privilege of seeing throughout his entire career.
Yeah.
I would argue that there's no NXT UK without Will Ospreay because him and Jimmy Havoc built Progress on their backs.
Yeah.
And that feud was the thing that got me back into independent wrestling in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And what he's been able to do in Japan.
Yeah.
On a pure match quality level, and I don't know about draw, I don't know how many people are going to New Japan shows just to see Ospreay. I can't tell you that. I can tell you that in a working men's club in Prestwich, he doesn't pop the number much.
No, but the likelihood here is there was quite a few people bought tickets to Zuma Hall to see that Best of Super Juniors final because he was in it.
Exactly. But I will say about that, and that is a real match that I saw in Prestwich, and this is not that long ago either. We're talking a year and a half ago, something like that.
Yeah.
He was in his, you know, in his sort of New Japan heyday. He played full on Blue Eye in a family friendly show.
Of course he did.
Exactly. But that's the thing. You see him, you've seen him as a heel.
Yeah.
Like sort of rotten, like the stuff he's done with Paul Robinson and Swords of Essex, like proper down and dirty heel. He can do camp shows essentially as a Blue Eye.
Yeah.
And he can do these huge spectaculars in massive stadiums and put on 5-star matches with a variety of opponents. A lot of the guys you mentioned, and again, haven't seen their entire career, so maybe that's just me, but I kind of feel like they've only got a couple of matches.
Yeah.
I mean, even Regal, who was great at what he did, two or three different styles that he worked for most of his career.
I would say that the answer to that is Robinson. Billy Robinson was
absolutely
a huge draw in the AWA, a huge draw in Stampede, a huge draw in All Japan, a huge draw in New Japan.
And
the only place he didn't go to was the WWF, as it was then, partly because I don't think Vince Sr. could trust him.
Oh, no.
No, because he would have tied Bruno in knots.
Yeah, I mean, he'd have walked out with all the titles.
Yeah.
Probably had the women's title.
The story, I don't know, I don't even Moolah would jump.
Oh, oh, God, I'd love to have seen that match. Oh, I went all misty-eyed then.
To give you an example of how tough Billy Robinson was, there was a story that Peter Maivia and Billy Robinson were... Well, Billy Robinson was on a Hawaiian tour. Peter Maivia went out for the night with Billy Robinson. And somebody was out with them, drinking with them. And Peter and Billy fell out in drunk fallout fashion. I may have been Pat Patterson, actually. And after about them standing off in an alleyway somewhere, Pat saw what was... We'll say X-person, because I'm not exactly sure who it was. The X-person got between them and said, right, you two, we're calling a cab and you're stopping talking to one another. Go home. And Peter said, why? And he said, because one of you's going to die.
Yeah.
So, and I don't want to see it, and you're two of my best mates. So, no, that's not happening. One of you's going home now, because I say so. And because Peter Maivia was a double hard bastard.
Of course.
And Billy Robinson was the hardest of all the hard bastards.
Yes.
So, that's the way it worked. The Bert Azzarotti story, I will tell you the Bert Azzarotti story. Bert did draw big in the UK. He was a big, big draw.
Because I have to say, I've never heard of him.
All right then, Bert Azzarotti. Okay. Did work for joint promotions in the late 1940s, got blackballed because he's a double hard bastard, and he did things. He was doing a 500-pound bench press in 1942. he was ridiculous, but he was a gymnast. He could shoot. He went to Wigan. He learnt from the Rileys. He could draw. He could talk. He was the total package, but because it happened before the TV era, like you've never heard of him.
Never heard of him.
He was one of the Gaijins that helped Ricky Dozan build the Japanese product in Japan.
Right.
He was a guy who kind of set that international circuit that I talked about Marty Jones doing. He was one of the guys who built that international circuit.
Right.
Essentially, he couldn't find a job in the UK because no one would touch him. And he would go wherever there was wrestling. Joe Cornelius wrote about him in his biography because Joe was also a person that wasn't exactly blackballed, but he was willing to go travel. And not every when British wrestling in the 1940s, when you could make in the 1950s and 1960s, you could make the same amount of money as a good quality fitter in a factory for working 20 minutes a night, 7 nights a week, and there was always work. He liked to travel, so he would always go where there was money to go. So what would happen was he'd get a phone call from a promoter in Zimbabwe or wherever. And let's say Singapore. He definitely went to Singapore. Be a promoter in Singapore. Can you come do 2 weeks for us? Here's the pay. Your guarantees this. Flight tickets will be in the morning. Yeah, sure. No problem. And then he'd get there and Bert would meet him at the airport. And it's like, you've wrestled everybody, haven't you? And Bert would go, yeah, I have. They don't want to wrestle you anymore, do they? No, they don't. I'm going to have to wrestle you again, aren't I? Yeah, yeah, you are.
It's a bit like Michael Hayes, but not for the same reason.
Yeah. So, and he said, I'll give Bert his due. He would make you look absolutely fantastic for 2 rounds. Then he'd murder you.
Yes.
And you'd land 3 rows back. And he said, it's actually a true story. One night he was wrestling Bert in the UK one night, and Bert threw him over the top rope, which wasn't a disqualification in the UK. And he said, that was brilliant, do it again. He got back in the ring and he threw him further, and he did land 3 rows back, but he was trying to land in this nurse's lap. And he did, and he got a date with the nurse.
You gotta get over the grannies.
Yeah, he's trying to get like just a bit further, Bert. There you go. So there you go. But yeah, Bert Azzarati drew money. The other person going back into the 30s who many old timers would say was Jack Pye, who was doing football stadiums in the 1930s. The Pye family, Dominic specifically, the Prince of Darkness, Dominic Pye, and the Doncaster Panther, Jack Pye, was regularly selling out Doncaster Rovers football stadium, much more than Doncaster Rovers ever would.
Well, ever have. So, but again, I mean, going back, yeah, far, it's so difficult to talk about attendances because there is so little other competition in terms of entertainment.
Exactly.
And, you know,
that's
so
it. It's a difficult balance. And I guarantee Jack Pye never left his feet. Didn't need to because he was just despised. So,
but I will say one thing. The fact that you didn't dismiss this idea,
I don't dismiss it, no,
speaks volumes to me.
I think,
so.
Well, I've had this discussion before of, there's William the person, and there's William the wrestler, and I cannot complain at all about William the wrestler.
No.
I used to complain about his selling, which was bloody awful, but he has improved
that.
I
cannot say that now.
I cannot say that now because he stopped screaming like a 12-year-old. Everything but, oh my God.
Well, his voice only broke a year ago. You know, I mean,
and he stopped sounding like Danny Dyer, the wrestler. So.
Danny Dyer.
Oh, he's got me arm.
Just went a bit Mark Kerr mode then, didn't it?
So he stopped doing that. And that has improved him no end. You know, the actual ring moves and everything, I was perfectly happy with. Storytelling was fine. It was just, please stop sounding like you're 12.
Well, I mean, if you'd have asked me when him and Zach first went to Japan, who we would be sat here now talking about whether they're the best British wrestler who ever existed, I wouldn't have said it was going to be Ospreay.
No.
And I mean, Zach's somebody who...
Another person on that list.
Absolutely. But, I mean, Uncle Dave, only a couple of days ago, named Zack Sabre Jr. as the best pure wrestler in the world right now. Just in
I
terms
would not
of
disagree.
Work,
yeah.
You know, taking everything out of the equation. He said, you know, Zack 1, Bryan Danielson 2.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's... But, I don't know, 15 years time will come back.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things that's the only thing that time will tell, because we don't know. Like, I didn't know when I was watching Marty Jones wrestle Dave Finley and Chick Cullen and Owen Hart in the mid-80s that was the future of professional wrestling. That's what it's going to look like from now on. You are getting the front row seat of how psychology is going to work, how matches are going to break down. This is it. This is the future, and it's happening right now in front of you. I didn't know that. I just thought they were great matches.
Yeah.
You know, and then I look 15 years later, and the guys who were breaking through are Benoit and Liger and Jericho, and those guys who learnt from those guys.
Absolutely.
And so we don't know what's going to be the next generation, and we don't know how that's going to affect what Ospreay's going to have effect on pro wrestling. You've kind of got to look at guys. Like, there is no doubt that Rey Mysterio Jr. is probably the greatest in-ring working luchador ever.
Yep.
And drew the most money.
Yep.
He won't be the most over, because El Santo will always be the most over.
you know, so there aren't statues of Rey Mysterio.
No, there won't be either.
In every city in Mexico.
No, right? No. It's like, so there is, you know, there's always this cut off between, like, my dad widely considers Eddie Guerrero to be the greatest all round worker of all time, but I know he didn't draw as much as Hulk Hogan or Steve Austin did.
Oh no.
He drew a massive amount of money in comparison to, say, who's champion at the moment in WWE,
but
whoever that may be.
In regards to the last thing you were talking about, how many top WWE stars now name Eddie Guerrero as their inspiration when they were growing
up? Exactly, that's the thing.
I mean, it's most of them.
Sasha Banks is a clear example.
Yeah, the big one, but I mean, it's pretty much everybody.
Yeah, that's it. And so. So it's difficult to say, will have, with that style that he has, which is relatively unique, and his... approach to wrestling is relatively unique. Can that transcend in the same way that a Rey Mysterio's style pattern has, or an Eddie Guerrero style pattern has, or even like going back to like a Johnny Saint style pattern has? There is,
yeah,
Johnny Saint was never a great draw outside of the UK because people wouldn't give him a chance because he was a light heavyweight. Only had like two or three matches. He did the international circuit, one or two matches in Japan. Didn't actually make his American debut till he was 73 at Shikara, King of Trios in 2012. So, but everyone does one Johnny Saint move now.
And I mean, look at who all the trainers in NXT are now.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they're, what is it, like 80% British?
Yeah. I mean, I think most of them have got shipped back here for NXT UK, but...
I don't know. I mean, even Dave Taylor's been out there.
Yeah, and, yeah.
I mean, Norman Smiley is, he's sort of not really British anymore, but kind of.
Commonwealthy. You know. But yes, so that's a good conversation to have. Right then, we'll best move on to these last two matches, which were Tetsuya Naito defeats Kota Ibushi for his third Intercontinental Championship. 22 minutes and 6 seconds of these two mad bastards trying to kill one another. It was great, don't get me wrong, but I want to see both of these guys wrestle for another 7 or 8 years, and at this rate, they are not going to wrestle for another 7 or 8 years.
Here comes another one of my tangents.
Yes.
I would like to discuss the question of whether there is a place for this sort of match in 2019. Because, and I mean, we are talking, it's the 10th anniversary of Misawa's death, and he knew he was going to go in ring.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, and he wrestled that style, and he I was reading something this week where he'd written a note to be given to his opponent when he inevitably died in the middle of a match, saying, you know, this wasn't your fault, you did your best. So he knew he was going. And I watched those old matches. I adore the old All Japan matches, him and Kobashi and everyone else, the Four Pillars. I love that era. But I tend to watch them through a sort of sepia-tinted, you know, they didn't know. They didn't know about concussions and CTE. I just think in a post-Benoit, post-Chris Nowitzki world...
Oh, yeah. I think...
I struggle to watch these matches, is all I'm saying.
I agree with you.
I did not enjoy this match.
I think both of these two wrestlers are more than capable of producing a match which is just as thrilling without these many spots.
This is exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, I
And you were just saying about Ospreay. And
I completely agree with it.
Chucking himself off balconies anymore.
No, and he's proved himself to be more watchable.
Exactly.
I mean, I think as well, we talk a lot about the FMW stuff because it's easily available on Beginner's Guide.
Yeah.
But I look at Anita, who's banging on for 60, still having the odd match and looking reasonably healthy because instead of landing on the back of his head, he was landing in barbed wire, which sounded like the dumber idea at the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
But 20 years later, he's still got hepatitis and a few bit of scar tissue holding him together. And Sabu, as much as he did some stupid stuff in his youth, still wrestling as much as he shouldn't be. But, you know, because he didn't do that much damage to himself by having long neck-heavy matches in Japan. And there's also the point... Misawa, Kobashi, Tayu, and Kawada all had necks like tree trunks, and Naito and Ibushi have necks like a stack of dimes.
Exactly. And I mean, this is the other thing about Ospreay now. That's where he's putting the mass on.
Around his
traps and around his neck. That's where he's getting big. And that makes a lot of sense for the guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, as you say, I really struggle with this match. And I mean, that normally on paper, you see that match, and that's like, oh yeah, this is my graps. Like, I'm going to love this. And it just made me wince, and not in a good way.
No, I mean, I think their match at MSG was better as well.
Yeah.
And it didn't evolve anywhere near as many Ryrus maneuvers.
This is the crux of the argument. It's unnecessary.
Yeah.
There's no need for it. Like, they're both over colossally. They don't have to kill themselves. It's the Cactus Jack thing all over again. It's like, they already like it. Stop trying to kill yourself.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, it's the... I think they're both overcompensating for... NATO not being the champion, which he clearly is a professional. I think as a professional, he understands it, but his character pushes him towards, I have to try harder because I'm not the top guy.
Yep.
And it's like, but I can understand that story that you're telling, but you can tell it without so much effort.
But that's wrestling those styles of matches is not how guys get into that position in New Japan anymore.
Okada makes half the effort and gets twice the result.
Tanahashi doesn't do that anymore.
No.
Like, if he ever did, really.
No. And he's 40.
Yeah. It's, I don't know, it's tough for me. I just think in...
I think Kota misses Kenny as well.
Oh, there's definitely a bit of that to it. Yeah.
Yeah, there is. I mean, yeah, you're going to miss your best mate, but there's a compensation there. Kenny was great and I have to be the new Kenny, which he kind of does. That's the position they've put him in. Hmm. But even Kenny didn't take that kind of risk around his neck.
No. You know. I mean, you know, Kota's a guy who sets himself on fire on the top of Jimmy Havoc's car, if you ask him to. Well, not even if you ask him to, he just does it. I can't imagine Dan asked him to do that.
Well, from talking with Emily, she said that they had planned it.
Right.
And the fireworks he'd looked up in the catalogue were definitely smaller than the ones he ended up.
Yeah. But even that, to me, seems a damn sight safer than dropping yourself neck first onto the apron 7 times during a match.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's less of it, none of it.
I mean, please. if you can go find it, probably still somewhere on YouTube. I watched the documentary about Kenta Kobashi's last few months in Noah, which looked at the end of his contract, the falling out with Noah over the injuries. I've seen X-rays of Kobashi's neck, and it looks like a map of the Mersey.
Yeah,
you know, so it's not good.
No.
And Kobashi's had a reasonable life. And he had a bitty body built for that kind of bump. And you look at all those great All Japan wrestlers and Noah wrestlers of the mid-90s. Hmm. They all have necks like there's no tomorrow. Yep. They've got shoulders that are wide and thick.
It's that classic shape, isn't it? It's the silhouette.
Pure Oresu Kings Road wrestler. This is the silhouette looks like Misawa in 94. You know, those kind of guys. And these kind of guys can't do that. You know, there is a reason why Manami Taiyo put on about 20 pounds when she dropped the AJ the WWWA Women's Championship. She didn't have to try so hard anymore. She was made, and that extra 20 pounds meant loads of padding.
Yeah.
Bull Nakano now is 40 pounds lighter than she was in her heyday, actually looks younger than she did when she was 16 years old, believe it or not, despite the fact she's 50, because she doesn't have to carry that much weight around, because she needed to make sure those big bumps, those off the top rope leg drops and off the top of the cage leg drops didn't hurt her in the long run. Yeah. And it's as a result of that, she's still walking properly when she shouldn't really be.
I mean, we can go back and look at Zack Sabre Jr. I mean, obviously, like, he's probably one of the greatest at that style of wrestling that has ever lived. But that's the style that makes sense for his frame.
It does.
More than anything.
And also, you know, Johnny Saint was still wrestling in the main event at 73 years old.
Yes.
Yes. Occasionally, yes. But he did. Uh-huh. You go back and watch King of Trios, that 6-man match against Bryan Danielson, Dave Taylor, and Claudio Castagnoli against Skyada, Quack, and Johnny Saint. I'll defy you to find a better wrestling match of people that know how to tell a story, can make it exciting for those fans who know what's going on. Mm. It was outstanding. And like Quack's team was an average age of like 54.
Yeah.
You know, because they knew what they were doing.
And you talk about the crowd reaction, that's where it gets a bit muddy with this match, because Osaka's a bit funny, isn't it? It's a bit...
As Kevin Kelly quite rightly said, you know, Osaka and NATO, you could write a book.
Yeah, exactly. So you don't... It's kind of hard to tell in a vacuum how they would have reacted to that match. But I wonder whether the modern New Japan audience... whether they're wanting that sort of a match.
I'm not sure they do. I think they want nice young men telling nice stories.
I think so as well.
And I think, you know, Okada does that perfectly well for them without the then he can put as much emotional wreckage in there as he wants to.
Yeah.
And I think you do that, you do those one big moves every once in a blue moon, but not three in a match for each of you. You don't need to. It's not necessary. And that was the downfall of ECW. One of the many downfalls of ECW was the fact that at the end of the night, even on house shows, the dressing room looks like a triage unit. You had people bleeding all over the place, or getting stuff taped up because they were aching all over, because everyone was trying hard. Gotta send the fans home happy. They drank that Kool-Aid. I love ECW, don't get me wrong. But you go watch Impact on Friday nights and see the state of those guys now and comparison to where they were 25 years ago. There's a reason why they walk the way they do and why Sandman isn't wrestling anymore.
I saw Sabu couple of years ago.
Yeah.
It ain't pretty.
No, it's not. And it's like...
And Will Ospreay still owes him 200 quid, so...
Probably.
But, and with, I mean, Shabata's watching from the curtain as well.
Yeah.
Like, you know, yeah. Just have a think.
Yeah, calm down.
So, yeah, I can't review this match because...
It was...
just tough to watch for me.
It was great, but it wasn't necessary. Hmm. I mean, it is... I've seen guys have better as good matches without anywhere near as much risk.
Yeah, which is the point.
Which is kind of the whole point.
That's
yes,
that's the exact word.
As Bret Hart once said, you know, great matches shouldn't hurt anyone. You know, they should just be stories well told. Mm. And I think there is a case for making big spots and doing big spots every once in a while.
But there's safe big spots.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Like that neck bump onto the ring corner of the ring apron, which potentially probably was to land on the ring apron because that would have been slightly safer. You don't need that bump.
No.
You know, there's a couple of bumps that were dangerous you could get away with. There was room for error. Mm. But this was... I mean, the thing I've been thinking about, actually specifically this match, is the victory star drop, Manami Toyota and Aja Kong at Big Egg Universe.
Mm-hmm.
The most dangerous move ever attempted in pro wrestling. Performed by the best wrestler that ever lived, mm-hmm. on arguably the second greatest wrestler that ever lived, that trusted... I said arguably.
But she's damn good. All right,
Aja Kong is the greatest big monster wrestler ever all time, I would say.
Okay.
I'm saying it.
Yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, you're saying it.
That's fine. Saying, okay. Aja trusted Manami to do that particular move.
Hmm.
That move was built up to because the story was told that that risk had to be taken. Manami had to take that risk to make that match work. The only way I can beat this monster is by trying the most dangerous move ever, and it didn't work.
Yeah.
You know, there was a story to be told which laid into the follow-up of Manami finally figuring out the puzzle of Kong and how she was going to beat her.
Mm-hmm.
There was a reason why that maneuver happened, and I've got a feeling of an article in me about this, and I'm going to write 900 words about one move, which I think needs to be done. And every time like I post that gif online, well, that just looks dangerous to me, is the response I get. They clearly don't know what they're doing.
And in a vacuum.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
maybe.
It does. But if you know the knowledge of that move, that story of how that story was told, it makes perfect sense if you've got any sense of rationality about you.
Well, that's your mistake for putting it on Twitter.
Twitter wrestling fans and rationality, yes. Anyway, right, yeah. So, but there's reasons why that happened. And I don't think Ibushi versus Naito is a feud that warrants that kind of risk.
No. This is Cactus Jack taking the powerbomb on the concrete.
Yeah.
And then the commentators just going, oh, that'll give you a headache. And
yeah.
And moving on with their lives.
Yes, this is far too much. This is New Jack dropping somebody off the top of a sign, doing a flying tackle off the top of a balcony for no apparent reason because he got paid $500.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, why?
It might make reason for them, but there's no reason for it in the crowd's eyes.
No.
So what's the point?
Yeah, yeah. You're just doing it for the point of violence and that's it. Anywho, on that sad note, let us move on to the main event of the evening, which was Chris Jericho versus Kazuchika Okada for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship match. It was 25 minutes and 43 seconds of a remarkably scrappy affair, which... I don't think Okada was at fault. I think Jericho was having an off night. I think Jericho's brain was still in South Florida or wherever Moxley stuck it at the end of Double or Nothing.
Just in a jar.
Wait, what between his ears?
Fetch me the brain. Right, we've established that Chono is L.I.J. dad.
Yes.
And that Haku is Bullet Club dad.
Yes.
So whose dad is Chris Jericho? Because he's somebody's dad. This is... I thought, like, this whole weird sort of emo dad thing, I didn't really get it until I saw a picture on Instagram last night on Zach Gibson's Instagram.
All right.
Of Zach Gibson and James Drake and Adam Cole.
Yeah.
Backstage at Download with Corey Taylor from Slipknot.
Oh, that another one. Yeah, I've seen the picture.
You've seen it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I realise we can't even see Corey Taylor's face.
Yeah.
But he still managed to look like somebody's dad wearing
Full Slipknot.
Like Slipknot cosplay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just like, you know, he's coming to the gig and he wants to show he's hit with the kids. So he's dressed up as Corey Taylor. And that's what Jericho looks like to me. It's this, like, you know, Sting did the Crow, but that was the 90s. It was fine. And he looked great in it because of the chiseled jaw and he, you know, the Gene Simmons thing and the white. It brings out the cheekbones. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is not that.
No.
This is
your Auntie Brenda on a gin bender.
This is, I was that age in the 90s.
Yes.
But I'm still dressing up as the Crow.
Yes.
This is Robert Smith from The Cure.
And but, the same waistline, funnily enough, as Robert Smith from The Cure.
But now. But now, not in the 80s.
Yes.
So, Chris Jericho, great legend, can still put on a good match.
Yes.
You put him in the right spot, mm-hmm. he will do the job for you.
Did all right with Kenny Omega at Double or Nothing.
Absolutely did. But 25 minutes in the main event, when you're following... I know what I said about Naito and
well, essentially you're following a car crash.
Yeah, and then before that you're following Ospreay and Dragon Lee.
You're following the Nureyev ballet followed by a car crash. You have to do something.
Yeah, and he absolutely could have done, and he's going for this like mad brawler thing. He's got the sort of Terry Funk in the Ric Flair feud, throwing the chairs about kind of thing, which is great, and I think that's a good sort of you know, a good gimmick for him to run with. But 25 minutes? No.
25 minutes with rules. Let's point that out.
Yeah, and I think they have it in their head that it's an Okada match. And it's on the top, so you've got to go half an hour.
Yeah.
Because that's what we do. It's an Okada match.
Well, I mean, but even then, when he wrestles Farley, they don't go any longer than 16 minutes.
No, they don't.
Because they know Farley's the best big man wrestler they've got, possibly the best big man in the big companies at the minute, but he will be the first to admit, like, 16 minutes, oof, you know.
So who's the deluded one here?
My argument is, you've got Okada across the fucking ring from you. The greatest wrestler in the world. Right now, there is no better worker. Yep. So you let him do his thing.
Uh-huh.
You don't try and run the table. No matter how great you are, no matter you're the veteran and da-da-da-da and the amount of money they're paying me. No, you let that man across the ring carry you like a baby for 25 minutes and let you do your stuff.
Well, I'd say 15, but...
All right, let's admit that it was like 10 minutes too long. But even if they said, we want 25, you let him do his thing and carry you for 25 minutes. Nah. You don't try and run the table because it's not going to work, and that was exactly what happened.
But I'm not sure that works either, because I don't think that this Jericho, and I'm not even talking about his ability, I'm just talking about the gimmick that he's running now and his style that he's supposed to be working. I don't know that you can do the 25 minute Okada main event with that character, and I don't think you should be trying to.
No,
I think you should be going off the rails a bit. You should be having a bit of a brawl. You should be doing a Suzuki style match, even. Going to the crowd for a bit.
I mean,
maybe there's a little bit of blood. I don't know.
How long did he go with Kenny? I'll go and look up and see how long he went with Kenny.
I have a feeling it was probably about half an hour. This is what I'm saying. He can do it.
Yeah, but he didn't want to do it that day.
I
think he wanted to have a great match.
And the fact that this match seemed to just be a setup for the Tanahashi feud.
Yeah.
I wonder if that was in the back of their minds. They were just like, well, there's no point as, you know, we're not working towards anything, the two of us. So
he went 1 minute longer with Omega.
Right, okay.
And that was a perfectly serviceable match. In fact, it was 4.25 stars from Meltzer and 7.57 from the Gage match user. So
there
is a broad spectrum of support for that match.
Yeah.
Whereas this was just not... It wasn't awful, because it's Jericho versus Okada.
Yeah.
But it wasn't...
Again...
Watchable.
We're grading on the New Japan curve.
Yeah, this is the thing. Yeah.
But the fact that I enjoyed a match with Yoshihashi in, and also a match with Taichi in, more than I did the main event of this show...
begs some questions.
Yeah.
And begs some answering, to be honest. But it was what it was. It wasn't great. It wasn't the kind of thing we was expecting, certainly.
Mm.
It was different, and sometimes different is good, but this was not good. and didn't really do anything for Okada. No. I mean, they've been saying, Okada's been saying in commentary, like, there's nothing left for me to do as champion. The only thing I can do now is spread the word of New Japan Pro Wrestling, which is a noble goal, but I don't
think... Is it a storyline?
I think it can be a storyline, but not with Jericho in this mood.
And it was never meant to be, and that's I think that is partially the problem.
Moxley's the guy you tell this storyline with.
Yeah.
Because he's the philosophy of a different way.
Yeah,
that's how you go about it. But they can't put him straight in with Moxley because it's just going to be like...
True. But there again, I'd still like to see Moxley or whoever taking Okada out of his comfort zone a little bit.
Yeah.
Because Okada and a lot of great wrestlers, I mean, Ric Flair is the prime example of this, they do tend to fall into a formula as they, get into the swing of their career. And they're at the height of their powers. They've got a match, haven't they?
No, there's the Flair match. There's hundreds of Flair matches out there.
Yeah, exactly. And Okada sometimes, not always, and they're always good, like Flair's always were.
Yeah.
But I do tend to find, with a lot of them, you can almost skip the first half.
I think Okada, I like the first half because I know Okada's going to start slow. And it goes back to the... It goes back to Sashimoto was the same way.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got... His pacing is amazing.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it, and that's why the matches are good, and that's why you can watch them all. There's a certain formula to him.
Yeah,
I would like him to have a good long feud as champion with somebody who just rips him out of his comfort zone.
Yeah.
And I think they maybe thought they could do that with Jericho.
Yeah, ain't gonna happen.
But it just didn't.
didn't
for whatever reason on the day.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen it a few times. You put two great wrestlers together, and for whatever reason, they just
don't mesh.
Don't connect. And I think that's what happened here.
Yeah.
But I think you maybe could have seen that in the first 10 minutes.
Mm.
Maybe called an audible.
Yeah, possibly.
You know, maybe extended that beat down at the end. I don't know. But I suppose then you've still got to have the Tanahashi running. And if he leaves it too long, he just looks like he's being...
You're sat there.
And I know I'm going to upset you, but Chaos are generally pretty useless at saving
people. Oh, no, you're quite right. It is like the only person that pays attention is Ishii. Everyone else is back at the hotel.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, so
Yano's holding court in the bar. Nobody's paying attention.
He'll be fine. He'll look after himself. Be reet. Yeah.
So.
And to be fair, because there's the Thor, it should be anyone from regular army. Because apparently they've all gone to the pub with them.
Yeah.
So I agree with you. I think for those of you who don't know, you haven't seen it, you're watching this for results. Then Okada did take a beat down, a pretty serious beat down from Jericho at the end of the match.
And
an
effective one, I thought.
Like. Yes, it did tell the story correctly. Yeah. And it did look threatening to the champion, which is what they were after.
Yeah.
I can't beat you, but I can beat you up.
But it sort of made you feel like that was the main event.
Yeah.
And the match was just something they had to do.
Do to get the justification of this at the end. And then Hiroshi Tanahashi comes in to make the save, setting up Tanahashi versus Jericho, which is probably a more tantalizing box office affair than Okada versus Jericho. Because I'm not being funny, when they announced it, I'm like, Okada versus Jericho is never a match I really wanted to see.
No. Which...
Not this version of Jericho, anyway.
No. I mean, Lionheart. Chris Jericho.
Yeah. All right, sign me up tomorrow.
Yeah,
that'd
we'll have
fine.
Some of that.
I mean, we had a little bit of Lionheart, but not enough.
Yeah. It's a weird one. I mean, you know, I do like Jericho, and even still, and I think use him correctly, and he's blinding.
Yeah.
But there's certainly a wrong way to use him at this time in his career.
Yeah. So then, that kind of closes our card out. Were you happy with the whole show?
I really enjoyed it. I mean, this, like I say, I've sort of been off the wrestles for a bit recently. And I mean, New Japan is always a great thing to ease you back in because you know you're going to get good shows.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to see any rubbish. I sort of spoilt myself by watching nothing but live wrestling for years and just never watching anything on record like that I wasn't there for. But New Japan is the one thing that I'm quite willing to watch on demand. And overall, I really like the show. Unexpected high spots.
Yeah, that's
and expected high spots.
Indeed. Right then, well, that pretty much wraps our coverage up for New Japan Dominion. Next week, not sure what we'll be looking at. Well, we're probably going to have the Beginner's Guide to Japan back again. Me and John Dinsdale have a show in the can waiting for you. But if there's anything else that comes up, we'll certainly have a look at it. I've been James Troopany. You can find me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can find Simon at Butlin's Club on Twitter.
Yes, I stay out of conversations about American gun crime, generally. So
I should have done. but there you go. You can find the show at Troopany Show on Twitter, and you can find us on Facebook, The Troopany Show. You can also find us on Patreon, where you can keep us free forever for everyone. And thank you for those of you who have subscribed to us and made us free forever.
Do we not say Patreon?
Patreon. I say Patreon. You say Patreon. I say Patreon. You say Patreon.
I say
Patreon.
I feel like British. It should be Patreon.
Patreon.
Shouldn't it?
Maybe so. I'm not really sure.
Because you patronise.
Yes.
You are a patron.
Patron.
You
yes, are, Patreon.
You are
yeah.
a patron or a patron. No, you are a patron.
You're a patron,
you
yes. Yes. You patronise our podcast, and please come back and patronise us some more.
Yeah, so we can so we can afford some pop filters.
Oh, dear. Where was I? You can follow our partners. Powerslam.tv and use our code MULLETWATCH to get a free month whenever you subscribe to them. That makes all of our regulars pop. Si is doing a little dance because he heard the word mullet watch. We came up with that. It's the best thing we ever did. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, we have Telling Stories, which will be out tomorrow, where I'm looking at the continuing story of Doc and Gordy in All Japan Pro Wrestling. We should have the Wrestling Rewind, the first episode of the new format. We would like to thank Mike Freeland for all the things he's done for our podcast. He's been absolutely awesome. If you didn't hear last week's show with Mike, Dara, Tony and Marcus doing their goodbye show, you really need to listen to it. It's awesome. Just japes galore from all four of them.
A cavalcade of whimsy
is probably the best way of describing it, with the best clash of Ohio, Irish, Scots and New Orleansian accents you've ever heard. It's just like they're from four different planets. How do we get all these people together? Wrestling. Yes, you should listen to that. Go listen to that. And if you want to listen to more Mike Freeland, you can go find him at MLW. There you can find him on Front Row Material with Jerry Lynn and Mikey Whipwreck, mm-hmm. Which is a very, very good and a very, very funny show. I have actually noticed that Mike sometimes doesn't get a chance to speak because he's laughing that hard for minutes on end. But yes, you should go listen to Mike. Thank you very much, Mike, for everything you did. We love you. Thank you very much. Anyway, take care. We shall see you soon. Bye.
Bye.